Hey guys, welcome to Bowler's Grind. I'm your host, Marshall Kennebrew. Today we have on co-host Kyle Michalowski and a special guest, you may call him Fred, Mr. Joseph Smith out of California. He joins us tonight talking about things going on in the Bedrock world, ball of the year, and just different things that are associated with bowling. And we do have a cool bowling story at the end, so I do hope you enjoy this conversation. So I was just telling Joe, Kyle's in his car and are you at home right now, Joe?
Yeah, I'm actually sitting in the passenger seat of my car that I didn't take to work today because it was so nice weather up until the time I had to go home.
So how you feeling, Joe?
Oh, I'm doing great, guys. I'm doing real good.
Cool. All right. So here we are. We're all in three different places. I'm with Mr. Joseph Smith, also known as Mr. Fred in the Facebook world, and I'm with Kyle Michalowski, and we are just chit-chatting about bowling things. How are you doing, Fred? Or should I call you Joe? Which one do you prefer?
Honestly, I've been saying this forever, and it's so great because I keep tallies of it. You may call me Fred, and the night's still young, so that gets added to today.
Fred, it is. Kyle, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm excited. Let's have some fun.
All right. So Fred, the first question that I had for you, and I know Kyle's got some as well. What made you choose the name Fred and Barney? Where did this all start?
Honestly, I believe you might have even been in the same town that this happened. We were having a tournament after party at some random hotel that we were all staying at. And the question came up because me and my best friend, Andrew Savorin, out of Bakersfield, owner of Southwest Bowling Supply. Check him out in case you guys are in the area. Me and him are inseparable. Okay, so we go to tournaments a lot together, just about everywhere. And finally, the one question came up. I want to say it was Jason Biber. You know who I'm talking about.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, he asked the golden question. He said, okay, if you two were cartoon characters, who would you be? So we both look at each other, kind of laugh a little bit. And I just said, oh, we must be Fred and Barney.
That is awesome. And the rest is history.
I guess it kind of steamrolled from there, you know. First, people started referring us to that. Then, of course, you guys may have seen the Facebook page, Fred and Barney Going Bowling on Facebook. You guys can find us there in case anybody listening doesn't know about us. We all started this as a practical joke to ourselves, okay? And it evolved into getting shirts and eventually the Facebook page, as I mentioned. And the following grew. It's not like we're a worldwide sensation by any means, but it has so grown in love and support from everybody. They're like, this is cool. This is what it's like actually being a bowler. And these two guys clearly fit the bill for the characters. But yeah, that's where we are with Fred and Barney right now.
Yeah, it's kind of cool because we were at a regional in our house together right before it happened, and he was showing off the shirts and stuff before it all started, and I watched it all grow from the sidelines, but it's been cool to watch.
I know, and it all started over a joke.
that is awesome, and I know that you personally are doing some transitional things. You're going to be leaving, or you already did leave the Air Force. What base were you at?
I was originally at Edwards Air Force Base, and they hired me as a pin setter mechanic. And then they realized that this kid can talk on a microphone a little bit and make announcements and conduct parties and turn lanes on and off and ring people in. So they figured now, okay, this is more of a supporting role, okay? And they changed my job title over to a recreation assistant. Okay, there's a recreation aide, which is basically the person that works the front counter. They really don't give a shit about bowling. All right, excuse my language. I'm sorry. I understand there is a language parameter. Are we supposed to be following?
No, you're fine. If that's how you felt, then feel free to share the passion. I understand.
All right. Well, sometimes they just flow with the tongue. All right. Yeah. All right. Well, anyhow, I eventually took on many other roles just by initiative because nobody else was really motivated or really courageous enough to do it. They didn't really have the experience to, and I can't really blame them for that. So I ended up taking on all these different roles as a recreation assistant, which is kind of their little way of saying, yeah, he's basically whatever he says goes kind of role. And it was great while it lasted. I mean, it had a heck of a severance package, which I'm really glad to reap the benefit from. And I've already invested it into going into business for myself.
Well, and that's what I was kind of asking and kind of getting an idea where Fred had been and where maybe Fred was going. So you said that you started your own business. You want to kind of give us the name and the rundown of that?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say I started it, but I became a franchise partner and sole proprietor of Park and Bowling Supply in the Palmdale location out in Bolero, Palmdale.
Oh, well, that is awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you very much, guys. Thank you.
So is this going to allow you to do more and just be around bowling more? Like, how does this open up doors and avenues for you going forward?
You know, ever since I really started, and I guess you could say my official date that I started there was August 1st, okay? This August 1st. And ever since, Grant, nobody really knew me, and a majority of the league community there, they still don't technically know me, all right? But I've gotten to know plenty of them, and they're starting to introduce me to a lot of other people in the league community. And we all share the same mindset, and that is, let's make our game better than it already is. And just that starts alone, that's great. My input, it shows that it actually matters, where before, where I was, it really didn't. It was irrelevant. So it felt like all the knowledge that I've put myself into learning about this game and what I have applied to it and that I have seen firsthand, whether it's BS or if it's a legitimate change, all right? As far as, you know, how ball motion goes and all that, you know, I didn't really try dipping into any of that stuff until I realized, okay, I'm going to start drilling balls for people on base here. Let's not try to pretend like we know what we're doing. Let's actually learn about what we know we're going to do. And that's where that all started for me. Granted, I've been drilling my own balls since I was literally 15 years old. And I've been,
oh wow,
you know, showing layouts that I wanted to try, and I've been watching other pro bowlers with a very similar ball motion to mine. You know, I'm a more forward rolling player compared to a lot of guys that get a lot more side rotation out of the ball. You know, I'm more of a 20 degrees, maybe a 25, but I see a lot of guys that are in the 75, 80 degree range. And I'm like, I want to do that, but I just, that's not really my game. Of course, I've learned my own layouts. I've learned all that. And, you know, I've definitely looked more into what the player does, and I've looked more into what their positive access points are to really pinpoint what we can do, what options they actually have, and what kind of bowling balls they're going to need. But all that, basically, I had to learn solely because I inherited a drill press on base at Edwards. And there was nobody there that knew anything about using one. So, you know, me being the avid bowler I am, I took it upon myself to learn from anybody and everybody that would teach me something. And I believe it's finally paid off.
That is awesome. No, I've bowled with you plenty of times, at least 10 times that I can think of. And I would always kind of use you as like an encyclopedia of knowledge, just whenever I was struggling or things that maybe you saw, and you were always quick to want to help me out. So I guess that brings me to my next question. Let's say I'm walking into your shop, Mr. Joe Fred Smith, and Mr. Fred, sorry, I'm walking into your shop. What kind of balls would you set me up for this upcoming league? How would you help a player out like me? Let's say I got maybe a little bit lower ball speed. I like to do more of the forward roll, but I have the no thumb. So how would you help me out?
Well, first, I like to see what you already throw. I mean, I've already seen a few fixtures that you showed me. I see a purple urethane in your bag. I saw a covert tank. And I love the diamond white dot. I just can't get over that ball.
That was the desert tank. That was the desert guy.
The desert tank. That's not the covert tank.
Nope.
Okay. Well, they make enough tanks where you're going to get confused once in a while. Okay.
You do know motive, don't you?
Oh, I have to say I was motivated. I was very motivated.
At one point in time?
Well, yeah. It was a great point in time. Yeah. They helped put Fred in really, really good positions. So I can't say any complaints about motive.
Are you currently with anybody, or are you free agent right now?
Oh, I'm a free agent.
All right.
I'm a free agent. I've actually considered, though, I mean, under, you know, the Park and Bowling Supply umbrella, basically signing with Team Brunswick. And it was a very, very sweet deal that I saw, but it was for my benefit, not for the pro shop benefit kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It is I guess you could say it's a business expense that I would probably write off. But a worthy one, because it's just too sweet to pass up, really. I really can't mention too much about it. But yeah, I do plan on getting with Team Brunswick. I think Track and Hammer have really, obviously Hammer always hits the nail right on the head every time. Especially their Raw series. I can barely keep up with the sales in the Raw line right now, because there's a lot of newcomers coming in and they're more than happy to get their own ball, but they want to throw the hook. And like you, Marshall, not a lot of them like to throw with their thumb. And I mean, that doesn't really limit me what I can do for you, but you know, you're going to get yourself into an entry level ball and entry level weight just so you can get used to muscle memory and timing. And then we'll talk about the bigger balls. Okay. That's basically what, you know, the newcoming bowler needs to really rely on first, is getting their rhythm and timing down. They don't need the biggest, heaviest hook and ball ever. They can get to that point, but they got to earn it first. Okay. They got to learn how to throw the dang thing first.
I totally get that. Totally. And I feel like I'm learning that right now. So amen.
Yeah.
So like, let's say a guy like Kyle, right? We got a two-hander, a little bit more ball speed. Guy's throwing a couple 300s, a little bit more experienced bowler. How would you help a guy like Kyle heading into this fall? What would you set him up? What are some balls you'd kind of set him up arsenal wise with?
How many games are we talking, Kyle?
We're talking about league, right?
Yeah, a league, regional, tournament, whatever you want.
All right, let's say league, and let's say a regional. Let's just do both.
Okay, well, I'll give you the league one first, because that's obviously going to be the easier choice. If you're bowling on less friction, newer lane surfaces, something that isn't really worn in, and the oil kind of likes to stick there a little bit, maybe even carry down a little bit more, obviously I'm going to want to try to start in the track area on a house shot in a league. And, you know, just find the right shape. Basically nothing too sporadic, nothing too angular. I mean, on any house shot with your kind of rev rate, I'd be looking at a good short pin or a good entry level with, you know, with a max flip on it, you know, just to show people that, yeah, you can flip the heck out of the ball when the oil is down there and they can't. Now, the only way that they can is when you put those heavy oil balls in their hands just to match up with what you're trying to do.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Now, let's say you break it down. Everything's breaking down, but now you're getting into a wet dry. Well, all of a sudden, you're going to need something that lays the core down a little bit sooner than that, something that smooths it out. So if you do hit the dry boards, it's not an immediate jerk off the dry. So something a little bit smoother, I'd say, towards about game three, if you have to move in. And a lot of these house shots these days, they're trying to put as much volume down as they can in the center. But when they get outside of, let's say, 16 board, they really don't care how much volume is left. So they're creating a very, very narrow beaten path. And that the lower the volume there is on the outside, the weaker the ball I'm going to be throwing when it even on fresh, you know. I could possibly start with, let's say, a black raw that has a little bit earlier motion but smoother reaction in the back, but I'm going to finish off with a beast, or Lord forbid my teammates get mad, probably even a urethane if I want to stay in the same spot.
That makes sense. Yeah, like at South Point, I've been having an issue where it gets wet dry like that. And a lot of times, probably because I'm doing it backwards, I'm starting with the big stuff.
Yeah, and sometimes moving in that far left, in some places, a lot of places, I've seen this on lower friction surfaces, when you get that far left inside, but now you miss left, and the ball just skates down the lane. No Brooklyn necessary, okay? NBN. And this thing is just barely taking out the three pin. I've seen it time again. I've left the bucket today in practice throwing a game breaker four in the wet dry, and it landed in the wet because I missed left, and it just kept on going, and I'm like, oh, this is terrible.
So Fred, I heard you bowled Lubbock. How'd that go?
Well, okay. So you can imagine just how much trouble it would take if you were living on the road life and, let's say, not one tire but two blow out in a two-day period on the way there. All right, so let's start there, okay? On the way to Lubbock, we're on the I-10 in Arizona, and we have a blowout. Now, we're with our friend Matt Ridgway. He runs the pro shop in Murrieta, at Parkins Bowl and Supply Murrieta, okay? In the Bolero Center there, so check him out. Really, really good guy, really good friend of mine. He has an RV that me, him, and Buddy Lucas, who also works at Oak Tree Lanes in that pro shop there, so you can find him there. They'll both verify this, but we had a blowout in Arizona at about 65 miles an hour, and we blew out the wheel well, and the septic, the waste tank opened up. Okay, it was road pee. Okay, there was nothing, no sludge. Nothing. Okay, it smelled like an old minor league baseball field. Yeah, that smell. So anyways, we have a blowout, and AAA covers the tire, no big deal. Okay, the spare gets put on, old tires put where the spare is. We're back on the road. Later that night, at about 12:30. We're on the 70 in New Mexico, headed for Texas. And we decided we're not stopping until we get there. Well, we're passing through all these little towns, and, you know, you got to go 35 miles an hour in these little towns. All right. So we're going about 35, and all of a sudden, the wobble. like it was a familiar sensation that Matt felt in the same tire location, and he's like, we're gonna blow out this other tire too. And I'm like, oh, that's gonna suck. So of course we did, but this time we're going like 10-15 miles an hour, so it wasn't so sporadic. It didn't, you know, didn't startle anybody. We're still sitting on seven of them. Okay, so now we're pulled over on the side, we're checking out the tire that blew, and all of a sudden there is a freaking cowboy on a horse. Like, you see his silhouette. You see the city lights in the background. And all of a sudden, there's a car that goes by. And he's just slow trotting his horse across the interstate. And he just comes straight up to us. He's like, howdy. I heard the blowout. I'm just seeing if you guys are okay. And I'm like, yeah, we're fine. You know anybody that owns a tire shop around here? Yeah, my buddy does, but I'm pretty sure he's asleep right now. And I'm like, you think?
No.
Yeah. So he's lasso and all, got a beer in his hand. He's like, I'll tell you where my buddy's shop is. You just head that way to it. Well, it turned out to be an Ace Hardware that obviously didn't carry the tire we're looking for, nor do they have a place to switch it out.
So, oh, great.
Yeah, of course. So Matt's figuring all that crap out. We're stuck until about 12 o'clock noon the next day, Friday. And we're still 6 hours out, and practice session starts 3 hours from then. So we didn't make practice session the first day of the Lubbock summer swing stop. We did manage to get a couple lanes that were used for the practice session that weren't re-oiled for the Pro-Am. The Pro-Am, they put out the house shot, and I'm like, oh, that's devastating. But they kept a couple lanes with the PBA pattern still there. We're playing left gutter number two. I'm playing first arrow on the lane left of the one I'm aiming on, okay? Like, this is where my feet are standing. And I'm thinking, guys, there's got to be another way to attack these lanes. Like, if they're going to get this dry and this worn out, there's got to be another way. And we all stuck to the same game plan, just start moving left with everybody else. And I'm like, okay. So none of us cat. I doubt if I averaged 180. I might have. I'm too embarrassed to even look.
One of those tournaments.
It honestly, for the level that is, you really can't say that. All right. It's not one of those tournaments. It is the tournament. Okay. They always have that level of difficulty. And by the last game, I kid you not, I pulled out a short pin that I drilled, I want to say, 3/4 inches from my PAP. It was real close. It was staring at me in the face when I was throwing it. That's how close it was. This core was in such a stable condition, stable position the whole way down the lane, the entire time. All I had to rely on was surface, and I forgot to do anything about that. This thing had, like, I think it was a Box Factory Allure Pearl with a 3/4 inch pin to PAP layout, a short pin. And last six frames, I struck out, struck with pride. I knew I was out of the hunt, and I was like, I'll be in the RV having a beer.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the bowling, I must say, I think we actually left that evening. We didn't stick around the next day for the cashers round. But we did have flow bowling in the RV as we were rolling, so it really wasn't like we were missing much. But we were there, man.
So I gotta jump in and ask you a question, because I know we were chatting about this before we started talking, but we're talking about failures and how failures can look a lot of different ways. Would you consider this trip a success, a failure, or are there different parts of it that were a little bit of both?
All right, so my soul tells me I'm embarrassed to even watch my flow bowling footage, but Yeah, I'm pretty sure anybody listening in on this, they're probably going to see it and be like, man, he sucks. No, honestly, you try it. It's not as easy as you think. So I believe there is a good and a bad that you must take. All right. Yes, you didn't bowl as well as you planned. You didn't necessarily stick to the plan either. So, and I must say that I felt pretty inadequate at that level. I really did. But that doesn't necessarily dissuade me from getting better to get to that level. So now I'm taking in that mentality and I'm collecting all the data that I have experienced as to what I felt there on the lanes, what was completely wrong. And the first thing I did when I got home was I was so excited to grab a few balls and start practicing and working exactly on the things that I had faults with. And, you know, you got to take those, like, for every time somebody succeeds and wins at a tournament, you got to take in consideration the hundreds of times it took them to get them there. Okay. Maybe thousands of times it took them to get them there. But you know what? I'm proud to know those people because they finally got there. And that doesn't mean I won't.
Absolutely.
So I want to actually back up what Joseph said about the difficulty at bowling that level, because I bowled the Masters this year. And I could not believe how difficult it was. I could barely average 160. The lanes were playing so hard that I had to do things that I've never done before. Basically, I had to throw it at the head pin with a reactive ball. And if I missed up the lane and I was standing on the gutter, if I missed up the lane, the ball would wash out every single time. And it was just miserable.
But
it's just a grind.
It was a learning experience, wasn't it?
Yes.
And I'm sure with that knowledge you have now, you've taken that with you to heart and always. So, you know, it's like, I don't want to run into the situation again, but I know the things I had to work on, so I didn't.
Yep.
All right. That's where that comes in. Okay. You can't expect to win every time. And that's why I always tell people my favorite ball is my spare ball. It doesn't matter what it is. It's my spare ball because I'm going to throw it every game regardless. It doesn't matter.
High percentage.
Yeah. Okay. let's say you have a perfect game a year or maybe two a year. Okay. All right. The spare ball gets to sit out a game. All right. He's going to be there the next one. It doesn't matter. Okay. Yeah. That's why I always say my spare ball is my favorite ball. It gets a good workout these days quite a bit.
That's good.
Yeah, but it's my favorite ball.
All right,
it's the one that you know that you're going to throw.
All right, so the question is the trick question. Let's see if you can figure it out. What's the most important thing, timing, targeting, or speed?
Honestly, I got to say timing, because anybody can look at what they're aiming at. Anybody can hit what they're looking at what they're trying to aim at. Okay. Your strategy on how to hit that target, that's yours. Okay. But if you ain't got timing, good luck getting to your target. And speed, basically how the pins are going to hit, that dictates to you if you're throwing it too fast. So let's say you're playing the right angle. You like where you're playing, but the ball is just finishing a little too quick and it's not finishing hard enough through the pocket. And now it's deflecting a little bit and you're leaving your 10 pins. All right. You like where you're playing, right? So stay there and slow it down. Now you're using speed control. And the ball doesn't want to deflect so much. Just because you're not throwing it as fast doesn't mean that it ain't going to hook nearly as hard or hit the pocket nearly as hard. All right. So maybe a little shaving of the speed off helps. I could be wrong, but it's worked for me. Now, when you try to increase your speeds, granted, I mean, all you can really rely on is if a 4-pin or a 9-pin is standing these days. Or if you're left-handed out there, if you're listening to this, it's a 6-pin or an 8-pin. So if you don't have enough speed and you're finishing too sharp, the pins are going to tell you that. They're going to tell you, hey, you just left 4-pin. You just left 9-pin. You know why? Because the ball's going too slow now. So there's that fine give and take, all right? There's that fine happy medium that the ball and the pins are going to tell you. You're going to put it in the right spot if you're that good and you keep putting it in the right spot. But now the pins are telling you something. They're telling you what your speed is like. Now, that is what my ball motion has told me, okay? It said, look, if I could slow it down, I'm going to carry this 10-pin. And every time I slowed it down, I carried a 10-pin. But when you slow it down too much, or you start seeing that little extra friction where you really didn't want it, now you're trying to get a little bit past that, but you're not trying to throw it too hard where the 10-pin shows back up. So, you know, your speed is really important, but I believe your timing is most important. You got to have good timing at the release.
So, Kyle, you got anything on that?
Oh, I agree.
So, what would you say is the most important thing to improving your timing?
Honestly, I listen to the Jeffersons.
Really? Is that your number?
I listen to a little Motown, and you know how they do that stride and they, you know, snap the fingers a little bit?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
All right, so I do the stride with my sliding foot, and I'm not making this up either. And I snap my fingers right where I want to let go of the ball, and it's a rhythm, you know. Andy Varapapa, God rest his soul, one of the greatest bowlers that ever lived, one of the coolest and funniest exhibitionists you'll ever see in your life. His biggest thing that he always encouraged was get your rhythm, okay? And his word was good enough for me. But, you know, music helps, okay? Maybe not the Jeffersons for some, but like, listen to some Motown. Listen to something that's going to make you want to swing your arm and stride. And, you know, do the two-step, you know? Take your, like, if you're right-handed, Do like a downswing and you're in like a two-step delivery, just as you walk in like windmills, okay? And just put your arm straight down, nice and vertical, with planting your step. And then when you bring it back in your downswing, like you're following through, make sure on your left foot it's straight down and vertical again. And I love rhythm. Rhythm is one of my favorite things to work with. And you know, if it wasn't for music, I mean, we'd be bored trying to develop it.
You know, it's funny because go ahead, Kyle. Go ahead, jump in.
Would that which one of those would be your strike song if you made it on TV of the PBA tour?
My strike song?
Yep.
You mean I get to pick my own background music?
Yep, I'm pretty sure that's what happens because I remember someone saying, "That's not my strike song on." One of the TV shows this year. I think it was Tom Doherty.
Of course he'd say that. Love you, Tom. Well, man, I never really gave that much thought. I guess it would have to be, I have to go with Shannon Pluhowski and say, "Tonight's Gonna Be a Good Night" by Black Eyed Peas.
Okay.
There you go.
I don't know, if you throw enough strikes, yeah, that night will definitely be a good night.
For sure.
They don't have a song for spares, do they? No. That's kind of my specialty at the moment. That's my specialty at the moment. I'm kind of working on that aspect of my game. But so, question for you, Fred. So you mentioned something to me earlier. What is the thin hit? You want to go in on that?
Yeah, I'll try to sum it up rather quick. This one, first, I want to give out a shout out to Bobby Campanelli. If you ever hear this, this one's for you, pal. The thin hit, and this, by the way, I would not have known about this without Bobby's influence, okay? So he's a guy that will definitely be happy to fill you in more on it. But the Thin Hit originated from championship bowling in the 1950s when rubber balls were in, slack lane surfaces were in, and you know, the oil was, it is what it was. You ain't gonna hook the ball, you're just gonna stroke it and hit the pocket as good as you can. So Fred Wolf has come up. He was the commentator for championship bowling. He had his own terminologies, as you will, on what he called shots that he saw. And at the time, not everybody had a TV, so they were listening to this on radio. So he had to use the best description he could for everybody listening on radio and not just watching on TV as to what kind of hit the ball made into the pocket. So the Thin Hit was born. And I can't really tell you who was the first one to leave it. I do want to say it was either Fred Lenning, or it could have been Nelson Burton. I really don't know. But there was this one moment where Fred goes, oh, gets the Thin Hit and he doesn't get away with it. You know, and the Thin Hit, what happens is if you get away with a Thin Hit, the head pin is basically kissing a sidewall so hard with enough force to knock down anything that you would have left on a weak hit. That's what a Thin Hit is. I see. Sometimes the Thin Hit is denied. And Bobby Campagnelli, you are the luckiest SOB I know, because you always get to carry a Thin Hit. I always see it out of the corner of my eye. His style is weird enough where you just can't not notice. And then eventually you're like, he just got the Thin Hit. Like, the head pin threw up on the 278. All right. It was like, it's horrible to look at, but if you can master it, you are one lucky person. Okay. Well, Fred Wolf came up with the Thin Hit, and he's come up with a lot of good terms. He's come up with the big bomb, the big bender. Nobody really threw a hook back then, so you can imagine a big bender being about 5-6 boards. And the guy, like one time we heard him say that ball hit like a ton of bricks. And it was like, just the way he talks and the things he says and how he describes the game of bowling, I have to say, Bobby will say it too, he is the best commentator in the history of the game, and he came up with the Thin Hit.
That is awesome. That explains it all. I feel like I've had a few Thin Hits in my life, but I haven't mastered it, so I might have to watch some Bobby Campagnelli in my film coming up.
Oh yeah, there's enough footage of him, I'm sure. You just gotta hunt it down.
You could probably watch a lot of Elmo stuff. It's probably like all his messengers that he sends, probably a lot of them are Thin Hits.
Maybe it's is it a two-handed thing then, would you say? Do two-handers get away with a lot of these Thin Hits?
All right, before we go, I want to talk about two-handers and no-thumbers, okay? You guys, if it wasn't for you guys, I don't know how much longer our sport could actually last. And I mean that in highest respects, I do. And I don't mean that in any pun intended to people that don't like it. Okay. So the people that don't like it, let me explain something. All right. I wouldn't have known Marshall Kennebrew or Kyle McClowski if it wasn't for bowling. And if they didn't know how to bowl any other way other than two-handed or no thumb, I wouldn't know them, period. And I'm very lucky for that.
Never thought about it that way. That hit me in a cool way, man. Thank you for that.
Yeah. Now consider this. Why close out? Why single out a community just because other people are starting up? And the community, like, if you see majority of places I've been, the league community is very shut in and they don't want open play or people that want to join leagues. in. And I think that's a major problem and why our memberships keep going down with USBC, why interest is lacking from the general public, because a lot of times the league community just won't invite them in. And I really wish they would, okay? And a lot of the purists of the game and a lot of the old school guys will say, if you're bowling with two hands or bowling with no thumb, you're not bowling right. You got a shelf life. Well, you know what? So be it. So make well of it, guys. You guys are going to do fine. You guys are going to do well. Belmo, I believe he'll last well into his 60s if he wants to. Okay? I think the same thing for Simonson. Middle game aside, yeah, I think physically, two-handed and no-thumbed, I mean, you guys are here to stay. You guys have proven that you are just as good or capable out there at the highest level. And in many cases, you guys do surpass the traditionalists, okay? And, you know, that's no fault of theirs. If they have a problem with that, you know what? You guys just go eat one, all right?
Nah, I hear you. Thanks for kind of putting your neck out there for us and saying those kind things. Because, again, at the end of the day, I got into bowling because I saw a bowling ball and I wanted to do it and get out of the house and get some exercise in. And then it became talking to people and hanging out with people and going, you know, this trip and that trip. And you know, it becomes commute.
Go ahead. Picture the wonderful people that you've met because of this sport, okay?
Yep.
People you never thought you'd ever meet in your life.
Because of a round ball that I get to toss forward at some pins and feel good about trying to knock them down and how to do it in different ways. And like I said, exploring the maze that is bowling, like, but doing it with a community of people that also like to do it. So like you said, go ahead.
I think I owe a great deal of gratitude to the community because of my own personal history, as you'd say. When I was in my early 20s and late teens, I mean, I was a bit reckless. And, you know, looking back and reflecting more now as you get older, you realize that a community like this is something that keeps you safe and that keeps you out of trouble. And I've realized the more I've surrounded myself in this game, the less trouble I've caused myself over the years. And, you know, I mean, I'm on the right path in life now. Personally, I'm never going to turn my back on this sport ever. And I, you know, it's like everybody goes through that period where they just don't know what to do. And, you know, when it finally clicks, you're like, this is it. This is what's going to keep me sane. And this is what's going to keep me alive and fed. And it is. It really is. And I wouldn't trade this sport for anything else.
And you know, and just to add on to that, and I got one more question for you, but like I said, not only just to get better in the sport of bowling, but to use the sport of bowling to get better in your life outside of bowling. That's kind of what I've noticed that bowling, what it can be. I've been going to the gym more. I've been working on my legs more just because I want to develop into a two-hander like Kyle and other bowlers that I see. But I want to do it the right pace, you know, for my body. And I've noticed that, like I said, I'm in the gym just because I want to bowl better. So,
well, yeah, but also it gives you the opportunity to have the public eye notice you, okay? And you don't really want to embarrass that. You don't want to mess that up either. But also it's like, this is where you shine. This is what you do. And, you know, it's like a lot of people think, well, I don't give a damn what anybody thinks of me. Well, actually, in hindsight, they really do. Okay, because in the long run, you know, the reputation grows, and you really want, like I can't turn my back on how big the community is in bowling. Okay, I know people from all over the world here because of bowling, and you know they've always been there as a friend to reach out, and you know it doesn't matter how up you are or how down you are, but you know what, everybody's there with you, and it's a blessing. It's a blessing, guys. It really is. I mean, it's a blessing to get to know you guys too.
So I have a question before Marshall's last question.
Yeah.
talking about all the community and stuff. So I want to know how, like, if everything fell on you, you became the commissioner of the PBA and ran USBC all at once, what would your way of growing the sport be? What would you focus on?
My first focus would be the youth. Okay. Youth bowling is so low right now. When I was a youth bowler, I looked up to the guys on TV and I was bowling in my hallway wanting to be like those guys, you know, with the toy bowling set, watching them throwing the ball at the same time. We don't have that. We have technology that has replaced a lot of children's free will and, you know, their virtue as far as what they want to be or what their aspirations are. You know, if parents, if you're listening, have your kids sit down and just watch bowling with you. All right. And take them bowling afterwards. Let's see if they like it. Okay, if they like it, put them in a league. Find a junior league. Get them into a ball. Get them into their own ball. And, you know, like, there's not enough of that happening. That's probably the biggest concern I'd have. And I'd probably run the biggest marketing campaign to get kids to bowl again and to love this game and to have a passion for it like we do.
That's awesome. So
the PBA will always be there. There will always be new players coming in and coming in and coming in. But what happens when that supply runs out? We need more junior bowlers. There's not enough kids in this game right now. Every league bowler that's out there that hears this and they don't have a kid bowling in a junior league, I'm not saying shame on you, but you should consider it, because within the long run, it's going to be up to them whether this sport survives. And we really need their support in it. So help us with that.
That's awesome. So that brings us to the last question. Again, thank you for coming on, Fred. I really appreciate knowing you as a person, not only as a bowler. I just wanted to leave it back to a bowling ball question. So you've been seeing a lot of bowling balls come out. What is going to be the ball of the year? If you're meeting someone, they come in, they say, I want one ball to strike as often as I can. What ball are you putting in their hand?
No, I don't want to say this to offend anybody, but it's going to be the Zen. That's a no-brainer. I believe that's top nominee for ball of the year. I think a close second would have to be the Obsession Tour. And maybe, you know, a last second third place, because they came in so late, I'd have to say the Dark Code, to be honest. I think the Dark Code is amazing.
Zen for the win. All right, Fred. Well, thank you. We're going to let you go. Again, take a time. Oh, Kyle, you got them?
I just want to let Joe or Fred shout out anything that he wanted to shout out or plug anything that he wanted to plug before.
Yeah, thank you for this time, guys. I really do. Guys, my name is Joe Smith. That is no alias. You may call me Fred. I'm notching that on my tally marks today. It's 11:29 p.m. exactly. So I think I'm up to like 21 today where I got to say that. Really, really happy about it. You guys can find me at Parkins Bowling Supply in Bolero Palmdale in Palmdale, California. I'm there 5 days a week. You won't catch me there Saturday because I like bowling and I want to make money doing it. So you'll see me at tournaments. And Monday nights, I'm going to be bowling in the Brunswick Invitational League down at Del Rio in Downey, California, with our beloved friend who has introduced us all together, Mr. Ramsey Proserto. He recruited me for this league, and I hope I don't let him down. But any other time than that, you guys can catch me there as soon as they open at Bolero Palmdale.
All right. Well, Fred, I want to say thank you again. I'm sure I'll see you around in Vegas. And when we do, I'll see you on the lanes and we'll have a good time bowling.
Oh, my God. I can't wait, guys. I'm going to be there. I will tell you this. I will be in Vegas on the first weekend of October. All right. I am celebrating my sister's birthday with her. I think it's her last year in her 30s, so she's going to leave me up to making all the unpopular decisions. So I will see you guys, no doubt, possibly that weekend. Okay?
Perfect.
For sure. For sure. All right. Well, take care of yourself and keep working on your stuff and keep doing good things for the game of bowling. Appreciate
Thanks, guys. All 10 back.
All right, sir. Have a good night.
Thank you, man. Good one.
Hey guys, just want to say thank you for taking the time to check our podcast out. If you made it all the way through to the end of the podcast, really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to listen. And a big shout out to our guest, Mr. Joseph Smith, aka Fred. I just want to say thank you for joining us. Really appreciate you talking about bowling, a little bit of learning about who you are and where you're going. And until we do the next one, we'll have one out in about 6 days or so. So until we have that one out, hope you guys have a great week, and we'll talk to you then.